This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Horror Bites on Safe Room, the show where we highlight short indie horror games and the people who make them. I'm Neil Bolt, and he is Jay Krieger. How goes it, Jay?
Pretty good, man. Feeling very refreshed after vacation, so I'm excited to get back into Horror Bites.
I know, for everyone who listens regularly, it seems like it's just been a week, but no, it's for us it's been weeks, plural, since we've actually recorded, so it's both getting back into the swing of things, so much so that I didn't even write one of my intros. So there you go. We're off to a fine start already on that one. But, you know, we did bring games, and this week we have a fresh pair of bite-sized terrors from the depths of Itch.io after our little Steam sojourn that we went on. We are going to be delving into a haunted mine and then finding ourselves sleepless in the Sapphire City. These games can be found on Itch.io, and if you play them and enjoy them, please help the developers out by supporting their present and future works in any way you can. As ever, links for both games will be included in the show notes. So first, this week, Jay, to quote another Jay, JK of 90s phenomenon Jamiroquai, we are going deeper underground, but will there be too much panic in this town? And by town, I obviously mean a mine.
Yeah, so for my pick this week, which was Haunted Mine from developer Nannings, it's a first-person experience where the player is put into the rugged boots of a demolitions expert who's accepted a job from a mysterious employer, asking them to descend a mine shaft where they must plant a number of explosives to collect their big payday. So from the jump, I think that this developer does a great job of saying very little and yet still crafting a really compelling sort of atmosphere for this. It immediately reminded me of Penumbra, where, you know, you're kind of dropped right into it. There's almost no exposition other than this is your goal. It's under mysterious circumstances. And you just get a few lines of dialogue on the screen or lines of text that just kind of create a flavor and a mood really concisely and really efficiently. One of the lines that stood out to me was the mind was living and it eyed him. And that's kind of it for as soon as you get into that mind, and which, again, has a great job of being unsettling, but not presenting, I think, too much up front that immediately you're sort of on edge, right? It's like, it's the fear of the unknown rather than going in fearing something that, you know, is present right from the outset. Yeah. I think that aside from the Penumbra vibes, it does a great job of taking a very simple mechanic, but utilizing the environment to make it that much more atmospheric in the sense that, you know, you have this little kind of radar almost that points you in the direction of where you're supposed to go to these blast sites. And then you just very simply put a piece of dynamite there and, you know, wait for it to go boom. But with each time you're placing one of those, I mean, it's a maze of a mine. So, you know, there's not a linear sense to it, but it doesn't matter because any of the blast sites that you arrive at have some type of psychological horror aspect to them where it pops up. Some of them are jump scare oriented. Some of them are more, again, playing into the fact of the unknown, something is eyeing this protagonist as they make their way through the mine. And, you know, jump scares are one of those words that some people are like, oh, this is a red flag, but it's not done in a traditional sense when you talk about these Itch.io experiences. I think sometimes we've seen them, you know, oh, that means something screams and the volume goes all the way up or something along those lines. But it's more about the fact that the player themselves seems to almost be being consumed by the mine itself. And there is definitely an eyeing quality to the horrors that present themselves. You know, overall, it ends in a familiar setup of like a chase sequence. But I found that given, again, the sort of construction of the mine and also what you're fleeing and how that ties into the various thematic scares that are in this. I found it to be rather fitting, tying into the fact, again, you had to plant these bombs, so the time limit actually makes sense for a change and whatnot. But what did you think of Haunted Mine?
Yeah, what you touched upon there with the, you know, the familiar nature of it is important because, as you say, if you know, these are the things that could be red flags if they're done wrong, you know, possibly. But here, it's a case of taking those basic ideas and just throwing different ways of approaching it at you. And I suppose the best thing you could say is that it doesn't give you the satisfaction, you know, the roller coaster adrenaline high of like, oh, this is when this bit happens, and oh, we're going up to the next bit, and this is where the drop happens. It's basically a roller coaster in the dark sort of thing of like, you don't quite know if you're about to hit one of those peaks and, you know, plummet for a few thousand meters, or if you're just going to be on a nice slow crawl. And that's kind of exciting. I don't know if you've ever been in one of those roller coasters where it is just like pitch black and yeah, like that's, and it's just such a amazing feeling because it's like, if you, you know, obviously, provided you're not already closing your eyes on roller coasters. but yeah, it just, the not having the knowledge of what's going to come next is just so exhilarating on something that you're quite used to at that point. You know, it's like you could kind of gauge, well, oh, that kind of twirl on this roller coaster will make me feel like this or that. And like, so yeah, it's kind of refreshing to have that. And yeah, so that's where I sort of made the comparison point between, you know, your regular horror templates and something like this, where it is just throwing out, you know, your dark, in the dark curveball to you. And as you say, even in how it ends and sort of culminates in that sort of chase and has, you know, a bit of a text crawl to sort of sign it off, I think it's understated in a way that you're going for that, you know, one of the two routes you would normally go, I think, which sure, is either like the big twist reveal or like the big jump scare thing. And it doesn't do either. It's just the, this was something that happened and then it's just unexplainable. And that's the beauty of it. Everything about it feels unexplainable. You don't get like this mountain of lore to explain why the things that are happening in this place are happening. And I like that. You know? It makes you want more, but at the same time, you'd be quite happy to never get that satisfaction, as I said.
Yeah, it kind of made me think about our conversation with Herc about Silent Hill last week, in the sense that, you know, the original Silent Hill didn't always spell out clear-cut answers for the way that certain things were in that game. And this reminded me of that in the sense that I was expecting, oh, well, we're going to get some explanation for the whole eyes thing and whatnot. But, you know, the fact that you don't get those answers, I think, is what allows the game to kind of let you just move on to the next thing. But at the same time, it stays with you a little bit more because, you know, as we've talked about countless times on the show, when something is blatantly spelled out for you, you probably stop thinking about it after a while because you're like, well, I got my answer. Whereas with something like this, it's like, oh, well, what is the potential reason for that? Or this and that, and you start to make your own sort of narrative explanations, I suppose.
Hmm. Yeah, exactly. I think overall, when you go that route, it's always going to be maybe divisive for people wanting that very typical experience. But I think in the long run, if you're going to be making these short games and then moving on to something that learns from them, I think you'll be having a better experience in when you do go to those bigger experiences. I think we've seen that show through with a lot of developers in the indie space who have made these smaller games and are starting to build up with that skill set they learned where they were like this. So yeah, I'm hopeful in that regard that this will be a good sort of launching point to go even further with it. So yeah, that's our first game out of the way. Before we tackle Insomnia, we are taking a quick break. Welcome back to Horror Bites. This week, I have got back into my text-heavy ways and gone with Sleepless in a Sapphire City by Coral Nuller. It's a poetic tale of a lonely vampire that isn't really about choice, but about connecting words. It is entirely text-based. When I say I'm going back to my text-heavy shit, I am not joking.
Never been a true example.
And yeah, it's... I say poetic in every sense of the word because the way the wording flows of each descriptive sentence in this is sort of lined with this haunting poetry to it. And yeah, I got this thing about vampire stories where they are, the tragedy of them is always the most fascinating thing. Like that, I always cite T.M. Wright's The Last Vampire as being like my favorite vampire story, because it strips away like the glamour and glitz of this whole, oh, it could be amazing if you were seduced by this sexy vampire and then live forever like that. And it just turns out becomes incredibly sad and twisted and depressing, you know, like that. And I don't think this goes quite that far, but the, you know, obviously this was made for a queer vampire jam. So, and you can clearly read that in the way the story goes. And, you know, there's a lot of descriptions of like how the mother is basically forcing this person to become, you know, this vampire, and, you know, not really giving them a choice in the way they're living and the way they want to be. And, you know, this constant battle in the, inside them about what they want to be and what they have to be, sort of thing, which is, you know, a great sort of analogy with vampire stories anyway. The connecting words thing is interesting because, yeah, as they say, it isn't just like choice-based systems. It's just like there'll be some words that you can click on that, depending on which one you click on, it'll lead to a different sort of musing or thought. And again, in this sort of very poetic language, it flows and you come back around. I suppose there's instances where you do sort of come back on yourself a couple of times and end up back at the same point, and that kind of takes you out the rhythm a bit. But I thought for the most part, it really did just keep the flow going quite well, kept the atmosphere, you know, perfectly right for what it was as well. And I thought, yeah, that's, you know, we've seen really wordy, descriptive stories in this sort of subgenre before. Have something like this where you are just really being very beautiful with the words in how you describe the situation, and something so tragic and clearly something so personal, I think, at the basis of this as well. Yeah, I think it shows that even without graphics and, you know, without choices necessarily, and boiling it down to just being a story that you click on different pages on, it's really effective. So, yeah, I was quite impressed with that. How about you?
You know, this was the ideal type of vampire story to tell utilizing this medium, I thought, because as I've mentioned in the past a couple of times, you know, we've covered a variety of these text-based games, and some of them early on when we were sort of picking through them, you know, they try to replicate almost like a lot of action, I think. I remember one in particular was about zombies and a zombie invasion or something like that. And, you know, a lot of that was like action-based. It was like, oh, do I use the knife for melee or do I go over here and use a gun? And for me, mm-hmm. personally, I would rather just obviously play a zombie game, like a first-person shooter or something, to play out those actions rather than reading and making decisions based on that. Whereas something like this that does not focus on action, but rather the internal struggle of dealing with vampirism, right? The loneliness mm-hmm. aspect you're talking about, describing a world that has evolved to the degree that vampires can almost not even blend in as well because of all these different modern day things they have to contend with now. Like thinking about, there's a lot of details about dodging billboards that were lit mm-hmm. up, like illuminated and whatnot, and having to make sure that you don't go down any streets that have those because otherwise, you know, you get fried. And, you know, I thought that that was great because it not only depicted the internal struggle, but also the way in which a vampire would view the outside world and how, you know, it's basically a hostile place at all times, whether or not people actually are aware of vampires' existence or not, which I thought made for a nice contrast. And at the same time, the way in which the text plays out on the screen, as you mentioned, mm-hmm. you know, not only can you click on certain keywords and then it evolves further or expounds further on those certain elements, but there was something about the way in which the dialogue moves around the screen. So it'll go from like the left side to the center to then the right side at times. And while that might seem inconsequential, there was something about it that helped the rhythm, I think, of reading it. Like the flow mm-hmm. of the poetry was, you know, attuned to something like that, where, you know, there's not a lot of, or there are no visuals or anything like that or interactivity other than clicking on the letters. So just that little sort of motion, I thought it kept me engaged in a way that I was not expecting. But yeah, like you said, the writing was just really, really personal. I thought it did a great job of utilizing a fiction subgenre of, you know, vampires and whatnot to tell what is clearly, you know, a personal story, as you mentioned, that game jam that it was adhering to. And yeah, it was one of those stories that made me be a little bit more open to vampires, I suppose. When you and I have talked about movies in the past, vampires are not one of my favorite sort of subgenres of horror, but something like this, and now, you know, the last vampire novel that you mentioned is something that's on my reading list, because I need to be a little more open to them and realize that, oh no, there are other types of vampire stories other than, you know, the seductress angle, which didn't ever did much for me personally. So to see something that's more personal, that at the same time is dealing with sort of a modern updating of vampires, but at the same time staying very true to sort of the core staples of them, was something that I really enjoyed. And I, yet again, you know, you're like the master of the text-based adventures on Safer, because every time you pick one, it always, you know, scratches a certain itch, even if the specific subgenre might not be one of my favorites.
That's always good to hear. And just to sort of add on this, you know, the elements of the story were taken from a story that had already been done and reworked before. So, but again, I think that adds quite a lot to it, because, you know, when you think of Dracula as a story that gets reworked and reimagined in different ways, like if you, the links in there, I think, to the original story, and you see obviously the elements that match, but, you know, the personal stuff that's been added on top really fits quite seamlessly in there. And that's what really impressed me more, I think, you know, that, because obviously not all the words are theirs outright, but to keep that poetic flow going, I think with someone else's words is even more impressive.
Yeah.
Cool. Excellent. So yeah, that's us back in the saddle today for this week. We're wrapping things up now, and you know, as ever, if you are a developer of an indie horror game, demo, concept, or game jam entry, we would love to hear from you. You can drop us a DM at SaferInPod on Twitter or SaferInPod@gmail.com to email if you'd like to be highlighted or interviewed on the show. Jay, it's been another good one. We will see you next week. And in the meantime, we will keep searching for some horror bites.
Murder in America is a true crime podcast that covers stories from all 50 states, including stories of mass shootings, serial killers, and lesser-known murders. Do you find yourself doing more research after listening to a true crime show? Well, Courtney and I used to do the same thing, and that's why we created Murder in America. Our podcast dives deep into each case. Our storytelling will make you feel like you're right there within the case with us, watching it all play out, and we do not shy away from the graphic details. If you're a fan of true crime, then listen to Murder in America on Spotify now.
Every town has its dark history. Hometown Ghost Stories is a paranormal podcast that goes town to town all across the globe, exploring the world's most haunted places, tapping into the dusty archives and the darkest corners to bring you the most terrifying stories of real people and their harrowing experiences. Hometown Ghost Stories dives into the history of haunted locations and investigates why and how these places earned their terrifying reputation. Rob, Dave, and Jesse go live every Tuesday night after an uninterrupted documentary-style breakdown on the case, followed by an open discussion with live viewers. Subscribe today to listen to Hometown Ghost Stories on your preferred podcast platform, or watch the video version on YouTube and now Spotify. Head on over to the Bloody FM Podcast Network and check out Hometown Ghost Stories, if you're brave enough.